Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, at least for today, a Natural Resources Subcommittee here for Monday, May 2nd, 2005. We'll be hearing House Bill 5011 for the Columbia River Gorge Commission. This is a public hearing today. We'll be hearing from Martha Bennett, the director, regarding budget detail, and then the overview of the governor's recommended budget, also at the same time from Jim. Yeah, from BAM, and Susie's going to be with us part of the day, and then we'll be platooning most of it.
I'm going to be in and out for a real
short time. Susie, why don't you get us started?
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger. I placed at your seats a copy of just a brief overview of the Columbia River Gorge Commission. The commission has not had a hearing in this committee yet, so they will be covering the materials from Phase 1 and Phase 2 today and tomorrow. And what I placed in front of you is a short memorandum about the agency, major policy issues. I just wanted to, since the agency and BAM will be going over most of that information, I just want to refer you to page 2, where I've identified the two issues that were in front of the emergency board, which was to allocate the money that was set aside for the agency. And there were two audits, and there were no significant findings in either one of those audits. And also in front of your seats there are the priorities, department-wide priorities, which is the legal file sheet that's got a fold in it. The agency's, Mr. Gore's presentation when he gets to it, so you have that available to you. And then a letter that the agency will be referring to sometime in their presentation from the commission. So with that, I will introduce Martha Bennett and have her come to the table, and Jim Gore, so that they can begin their presentation.
Very good. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
For the record,
my name is Martha Bennett. I'm the Executive Director of the Columbia River Gorge Commission. With me today, I'm just going to introduce a couple of folks in the room so you know who they are. On my right is Commissioner Judy Davis, who's the Gorge Commissioner who lives in Wasco, or represents Wasco County and also lives in the Gorge. Also in the back of the room are Kathy Obayashi-Bartsch, who's our financial staff. So if you see me turn around and look for something, you'll know that it's Kathy who actually does the real work in the agency. And Ann Squire is sitting behind her, who's the chair of the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Commissioner Davis would like to make a couple of introductory remarks before I start, and that will allow me to take the cover off the PowerPoint projector.
Very good. Welcome, Commissioner, and for the record, state your name.
Good afternoon. I'm Judy Davis of the Columbia River Gorge Commissioner from Wasco County. When the Oregon Tourism Commission runs ads with scenic pictures of Oregon, there's always one of the Columbia River Gorge. Sometimes it's a picture of Multnomah Falls. Other times it's a picture of a flower-filled meadow overlooking the river and its basalt walls. My husband and I have the privilege of living in the National Scenic Area, not far from that meadow. With that privilege came the responsibility to make our house blend in with the surrounding landscape. We carefully considered where to put our house so that we could use existing trees to soften the straight lines of the buildings. We bought 10 cans of paint, all dark browns and dark grays, before we figured out the colors that would please us and fit with the site. We had this responsibility because the citizens and elected officials who worked to create the National Scenic Area developed a model of shared responsibility, including responsibilities for individual landowners. The creators of the National Scenic Area rejected a proposal to make the gorge a national park. That would have concentrated authority in a federal agency and stopped private development. Instead, they chose a model that retained a mix of private and public lands and kept decision-making as local as possible. They wanted citizens to continue to go to their county governments for land use permits while creating the Gorge Commission to establish consistent policy throughout the National Scenic Area. They assigned other responsibilities to the Forest Service, to the states of Oregon and Washington, to tribal governments, and to others. I'm confident I speak for my fellow commissioners when I say that we all want to do what is right and what works. Doing what is right means fulfilling the goals of the National Scenic Area Act. The first goal is to protect and enhance the things we all cherish about the gorge. And there is much that to cherish. There's the awesome scenery, which my Uncle Ray, a long-distance truck driver, told me is the best in the country that you can see from the interstate highway system. There's the evidence of thousands of years of human habitation, the opportunities to hike, fish, bike, windsurf, and enjoy other recreation, the rivers and the waterfalls, the lush green forests, and the dry sagegrass land. The second goal is to help build prosperous communities within the gorge. Despite all the resources of the gorge, the area has had some troubled economic times. When the aluminum plants in the Dalles and Goldendale shut down, hundreds of good-paying jobs were lost. But now the Dalles is seeing a renaissance of new development and new jobs, thanks in part to the appeal of the gorge and the loans and grants available because of the Scenic Area Act. We commissioners, of course, have some different ideas about how to accomplish the scenic area goals, but we are committed to a plan of action that works. Let me give you some examples. We recently completed an update of the management plan that fixes some of the things that weren't working well, and now the counties are adopting ordinances to implement those changes. We're working on a scenic handbook to make it easier to understand what you need to do to make your buildings blend in with the landscape. And we've given our executive director authority to certify some of the economic development loan and grant requests, shortening the time it takes to get approval. We are here today because we need your help to do what is right and what works for the landscape of the gorge and for the people who live in and who enjoy this place. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. I appreciate that.
All right.
Martha,
Judy got to do the fun part.
She did.
And I get to do the not-so-fun part. I'm here today to talk about the agency's upcoming biennium budget, and I'm going to cover this ground just as efficiently as I possibly can. I'm going to cover six topics, and, you know, my high school speech teacher would be embarrassed because it's not three, but I couldn't find a way to boil it down. First, I'll cover the agency's background. Second, what we've managed to accomplish in the past biennium. Then, of course, I want to talk about the upcoming budget, what we expect to accomplish at that level, our performance measures, and the 10% cut impacts. So first, let me start by giving you an overview, and I'll make this as efficient as possible because I know a lot of you have heard our budget before and don't need some of this information, but I always like to ground the discussion because we are probably the weirdest agency that you'll hear this session.
Appreciate the honesty. We love you.
The Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area was created in 1986, passed by Congress and signed into law by Ronald Reagan in November of 1986, thus ending probably 70 years of debate about how to protect the scenic area. And I think Commissioner Davis talked a little bit about the fact that we're not a park. We're also not a national forest or a national monument. And it took those 70 years to figure out how to maintain a national designation that allowed some kind of state and local control, which is what I'm going to talk about in a second. The National Scenic Area Act had two purposes. The first is to protect the resources of the gorge, and the four that are listed in the act are the scenic, natural, cultural, and recreational resources. That makes what we do a little bit unusual in the scheme of land use planning, but and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. The second was to support the economy by encouraging growth to occur in the urban areas and to allow economic development that's consistent with protection of the resources. The second purpose, I think, is frequently misunderstood. Our primary goal in supporting the economy is to make it to help the 13 urban areas in the gorge be healthy places so that economic development can happen inside those urban areas, and then to also allow some other economic development that does have resource protection as part of its work. And I love the fact that this fire alarm is right in the middle of my
perfect.
I hope it's not a metaphor. The toughest part about the gorge is that what we're working on is not just a pristine natural environment. It's a working landscape. We have over 70,000 people who live in the gorge, and we have millions of visitors every year.
Senator Shields is going to exercise Senate prerogative and make it somewhat more. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate the effort.
An incredible accomplishment.
As I said before, it's not a park. It's not a forest or a monument, making it somewhat unique in terms of nationally designated landscapes. And one of the things that makes it most unique is half the area, the land area that's in the gorge, is in private ownership. That means we work to protect the gorge not only in conjunction with other government agencies, but with the private landowners themselves. I will tell you, I've struggled a great deal of the last 3.5 years to find a good map of the scenic area, and this is the best one I can come up with. The nice thing is that it's got Camas in it. The National Scenic Area is 83 miles long. It stretches from Sandy River on the west to the Deschutes River on the east. The boundaries are a little bit different on the Washington side. It incorporates 4 designated urban areas in Oregon and 9 designated urban areas in Washington. Those urban areas are part of the scenic area, but exempt from scenic area regulation.
Martha, just one quick question for you. What's the typical distance from either side of the river edge that the area actually encompasses? I know those vary, but kind of what's the average?
Well, Mr. Chair, in general, it's about 2 miles from the river, 4 miles wide in general. There are places where it's as narrow as about 2.5 miles and places where it's as wide as 6 miles. But in general, it's about 3.5 to 4 miles wide.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
The urban growth boundary of those cities, if they get larger and the city takes them in, then is that new incorporated land then exempt also?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I wish that in Oregon, in general, the urban growth boundaries that are designated by the Scenic Area Act match the urban growth boundaries of the cities. There is a process, just like there is in Oregon, for the Gorge Commission to allow expansion of those urban area boundaries. So they don't automatically grow, but there is a process, for example, if they need additional residential land, for the commission to expand those boundaries, and then, yes, the expanded area becomes exempt from scenic area regulations.
Please continue. Thanks.
One of the things that makes us probably the most unusual governing agency that you'll get to hear during this session is that the National Scenic Area Act distributed power for governance of the scenic area widely. And my staff calls this my biohazard chart. I apologize for that. But
another metaphor?
No, in fact, just the opposite. But I think that this chart explains, I think, a couple of things that I want to communicate. One is we do share responsibility widely with other agencies, and it is spelled out in our federal law that different groups have responsibility for different things. For example, the Forest Service has responsibility for managing the federal lands and the lands designated as special management area. The states of Oregon and Washington have primary responsibility for economic development in the National Scenic Area, and they also maintain responsibility for some natural resource management and how we manage our historic and cultural resources. County governments administer the management plan on a day-to-day basis. In fact, one of the things I was hoping to mention to you today is that the state of Oregon in the past has helped fund the work that the counties do with grants through DLCD's budget. So when you work on DLCD's budget, we'd ask you to remember that there are county grants that have previously been earmarked through DLCD's budget that go to support the county work in the National Scenic Area. And last but not least, the 4 treaty tribes that have treaty rights in the Gorge have responsibility for working with us on natural resource issues and also on their treaty issues and cultural resource issues. So one of the things that makes the scenic area complicated is all of these layers of government have to work together cooperatively or else we have a train wreck. And sometimes when you hear issues that happen in the Gorge that went wrong, it's because somehow different levels of government weren't coordinating effectively. And I'm happy to talk about examples if you'd like, but I think probably you've heard some of those examples. I want to talk now specifically about the Commission. The Commission is a bi-state compact agency created by the states of Oregon and Washington under the authority of the National Scenic Area Act. Our responsibilities as designated by that compact and also by the federal law is that we do regional land use planning and regulation in the scenic area. And as I mentioned before, the 13 urban areas are exempt from our regulations.
Yes, Representative Chaffer.
Thank you. You answered Representative Krieger's question, but have those urban growth boundaries expanded? Have they went through the process, and was it smooth? Relative to people, communities outside of the area?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, we've had 2 urban area boundary changes since the beginning of the Scenic Area Act, one at the city of Cascade Locks and one at the city of Stevenson across the river. And the process was relatively smooth. We were sued by Friends of the Gorge for the urban boundary expansion in Stevenson, but we recently got a ruling from the Washington Court of Appeals that we correctly did that urban area expansion, so it was upheld. We have 12 voting members. And the way the commission is set up, it's designed to not give any balance of power to any single group. Or each of the six gorge counties, three in Oregon and three in Washington, appoint one member, and the governors of each state appoint three members each. We also have one non-voting member who represents the Forest Service. We have to be funded equally by the Washington and Oregon state legislatures according to the compact. And what that means is that your budgets don't have to match, but my expenditures do. So if one state funds the commission at a higher level than the other, the lower state really becomes the controlling force, because every dollar that we spend has to come 50% from Oregon and 50% from Washington. Right now, we have a small, flat organizational structure. We have one executive director, that's me. We have three planning staff. We have a three-quarter-time legal counsel, a secretary, an administrative assistant, and a half-time GIS coordinator. We also have an outreach coordinator position that we've left vacant after the cuts that were made in the agency last biennium. And it is our plan to leave that position vacant at this point in time. So we have 6.25 FTE. All right, next I want to talk about
Mr. Chair,
yes.
One thing that I might point out on the FTE is that they are Washington employees, not Oregon employees, so you will not see personal services in the Columbia River Gorge's budget. It's all paid for out of their services and supplies to pay for all the services that those employees generate.
Yes, Senator. Good to have you back, by the way.
Does that mean that they're actually in Washington paying a little bit more than we are by covering those?
Mr. Chair,
they're not maybe paying more, but they're...
No, we pay 50% of whatever the salary cost is for those employees. They may be in different salary ranges than we have here in Oregon, but we pay for 50% of
that. I guess what I'm trying to get at is there some administrative work or some stuff that they're doing that we don't have to do because of the fact that Washington's doing it?
No, Mr. Chair. Okay. Senator Shields, we pay for 50% of, for example, their legal counsel is out of Washington. We would pay for those costs, whether they were at the Washington rate. We pay for their personnel at the Washington rate, not the Oregon rate.
Okay.
And Susie, does that save us money because Washington has no Oregon state income tax or doesn't have a state income tax? Is the cost per employee less?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so. I don't think it does.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just curious.
No, we do have employees who are Oregon residents and they pay Oregon income tax. The employees who live in Washington get the benefit of not having to pay Oregon income tax.
The cost is the same.
The cost is the same to the state of Oregon.
Okay. But my question, though, is does it cost less to employ a person in Washington state than the same person who lives over in Oregon?
I think I understand your question.
None of your employees are in PERS, correct?
Mr. Chair, they're in Washington PERS.
They're in Washington PERS. Okay, and so are the employee costs different just because of where, you know, income tax on one, not the other?
Well, Mr. Chair, we actually do salary surveys to make sure we're in market. So what I would tell you is our employees are paid in market for their positions in the gorge. And in general, what we do is we compare ourselves to the six gorge counties and also to anyone else who might be attractive for those folks to live in. Because our goal is to pay folks as much as we need to retain competent employees and no more than we absolutely have to retain competent employees.
And that is a laudable goal. Please continue. Thanks.
I want to talk next about what we've accomplished in the past, in the current biennium, and before I move into the budget for the next biennium. One of the things I want to talk about is it has to do with how scenic area protection works. And one of the things I frequently hear is, isn't it hard to develop in the gorge? And the reality is that although you hear that anecdotally, development is going on in the gorge. And I think that over the past 17 years since the agency has been in operation, we've become a lot more knowledgeable and a lot more efficient in how we work with folks who are trying to accomplish development goals. In the past biennium, in Oregon, 99.5% of developments were approved. Now, those developments generally have conditions applied to them that help them comply with scenic, natural, cultural, recreational resource development protection. And in the last 2 years, that's meant in Oregon alone, or I mean, sorry, in the scenic area, 87 new single-family homes and 43 in Oregon. So on the one hand, it doesn't sound like a lot, but in a community of only 70,000 people, which is what the gorge is, it's actually a pretty significant steady pace of development.
Yes, Larson Krieger.
Now, those are outside of the cities. These are not homes inside the boundaries of the city or the urban growth boundary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that's correct. And when I talk about our performance measures, one of our measures, because we're trying to test that second purpose of the Act, whether we're being successful in helping support growth inside the cities, is we try to measure what percentage of growth is happening in the cities versus out in the scenic area. And so we can talk a little bit about the level of development inside the cities. Because certainly a couple of the cities are pretty hot right now and are seeing a lot of development.
And Martha, in your first bullet point there, in regards to the past biennium, 99.5% of applications in Oregon were approved.
Right.
Two questions come to mind. How many in Washington? And secondly, what was it in the prior biennium? And I'm assuming you're referring to 0305 biennium?
I am. And you should know that they don't line up perfectly because we're still in the middle of 0305. In Washington, I happen to carry these things around with me. In Washington, actually 100% of developments that were applied for were approved, including those that the Gorge Commission itself does in Klickitat County. In fact, just in case you're interested, the Gorge Commission staff have not denied an application since 1999. And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I missed your second question.
The second question is, have the percentages changed in 01, 03 from, were they lower or higher? Pretty hard to get higher.
Mr. Chair, yes, they are slightly higher. In the 01-03 biennium, looks like it was about 99% even. So it looks like instead of only one denial in 2003-2004, it looks like in 01 and 02 there were two denials in Oregon.
Yes, Representative Shoffler. Thank you.
Do you have, this is the applications that were actually filed. Do folks come in and inquire pre-application and be denied frequently or infrequently on occasion? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, first of all, not every county in the Gorge requires a pre-application conference, so I don't have any ability to tell you that. We do sometimes visit with folks who decide not to develop, but I would say it's not as frequent probably as the mythology is. But I can't give you those statistics Gorge-wide because not every county tracks this.
And Martha, will you be covering in your presentation current litigation that you're involved with?
Mr. Chair, I wasn't planning to cover a great deal, but I can talk a little bit about that when we get to it. There's a spot coming, right? I can talk
Perfect.
About that a little bit.
Please address that when we get there, and please continue. Thanks.
I wanted to show you a couple slides that show what happens. And I want to show you this slide. This is from the Twin Tunnels near Mosier, looking across at the Washington side. And there, I took this picture, I don't know, last fall, and at the time I took that picture because I wanted to know what that white thing was. And so there's two things I want to tell you about this picture. One is that white thing is a house. It's outside the scenic area. The second thing I want to tell you is there are about 20 houses in this picture. Now, one of the things that we try to do is help development blend in with the landscape. And when I look at the picture, and I can see it a little better than you because I don't have the sun shining on my version, I can easily pick out about 5 houses, but yet there are 20 on that landscape. And so I would tell you that scenic area regulations in general are doing what they're intended to do, which is allow people to build their homes, but yet not have those homes affect how other people experience the scenic area. And the next slide I want to show you is actually looking at one of those houses that you can't see. And I'm going to go back to the one before and tell you that if you see on the right-hand side of the slide, if you look up a little bit, there's a little white spot. Well, that's what we're looking at. But I didn't notice it the first time I looked at the picture. So what we have here is a house that was built in the scenic area since the Act passed. And you'll see that what Commissioner Davis talked about happened to this house. They've used existing vegetation. They've got a low structure. It's a dark color. And they've used non-reflective materials. But they still have a great view. So what can happen if everything works, which it often usually does? Yeah, you can't see that from there, can you?
Well, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, keep going. Maybe we'll see the house sooner or later.
I'm going to send Jim up there. Can you point out the house? Yeah. So
it's well camouflaged.
It's well camouflaged, and yet the person is still able to live in the scenic area and enjoy being the benefits of being on the land with a terrific view. In fact, I know that this particular house, you can see not only the other side of the gorge, but also the river, which real estate folks tell me is like the premium land benefit in the gorge, is not only to be able to see the gorge, but to be able to see the Columbia River as well. So this is how it works.
So go back to the previous slide, if you would, please. And there are 20 houses in that photograph.
There are 20 houses in that photograph.
Can you pick out all 20?
I can, because of the occupational hazard that I have of knowing way too much about development. But I think if you were to stand on that point and take this picture, you could see four or five houses. You would know that there's development up there, but you probably wouldn't be able to see all 20 of them.
Now, how is that house, that white house, outside of the development zone? And that looks like that's awfully close to the river.
You know, if I could explain why Congress put the boundary exactly where it put, they put it in all circumstances, I would be better. But the reality is, when we saw this house last fall, we went up and took a look at it, and it's outside of the National Scenic Area boundary by, probably an eighth of a mile. So it's not even
that far.
That's Strom Thurmond's cousin's house.
It's a fairly large building. That's why you can see it. It's two A-frame buildings that are connected by a causeway. So it's bigger than it looks in the picture.
Is that just a cliff in front?
Yes. Mr. Chair,
this is
Burdwine Mountain. It's just on the north side of the river from Mosier. If you go on the old historic highway up from Mosier, it's so between Hood River and Mosier on the Washington side.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we ought to take a field trip.
You know, that's an outstanding idea.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I'd be thrilled to organize a field trip for
us. Now, if you're down on I-84, though, you can't see the house, I'd imagine, just by looking at it from here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shockler, I think that's correct. I don't believe you can see the house from I-84.
Okay. Great. Please continue.
Oh, we need to go back and see if we can find Senator Bates' house. he's got a summer cabin.
You know, that the one slid off.
And that's a great reason to have a field trip. Outstanding idea.
He promises to provide lunch.
Oh, so much the better.
Let's not rush out with that all summer.
Well, the Senate does. I doubt if the House does.
Might be surprised, unfortunately.
Some of the other things I wanted to note that we've accomplished in the biennium that we're in now, as Commissioner Davis mentioned, we completed plan review, which was our first look at the management plan. And during that plan review, we addressed the subjects of appeals that we've had in the past 10 years, 12, 13, 14 years, problems that we've had in trying to implement the management plan, and many issues raised by the general public. I'm happy to talk specifics if you'd like. Also, just for your information on this slide, the things that are asterisked are the things that responded to Oregon budget notes that we received in the last biennium.
Martha, do you have a performance measure related to appeals?
I do. Mr. Chair, our performance measure related to appeals is the one... It is. I have to look at my...
Well, let's not go over that now, but
it's all related to alternative dispute resolution.
Okay.
But let me give you a highlight about our appeals. One of the frustrations I have about that percentage doesn't look good, but the reality is that our appeals are way down. In 2003, 2004...
Since you streamlined the rules, Martha, if you forgive me for interrupting?
Mr. Chair...
Or before the...
Both. Okay. Mr. Chair, I believe the thing that has greatly affected our reduction in appeals is the work that we have done in cooperation with Gorge Counties on what we call county monitoring. We work with them early in a development process, so when they receive an application, they talk with us, and we try to identify potential problems with an application before we're in the development process, and before we're at the point where we're either taking public comments or in an appeals phase. So I believe the reduction in appeals have really come with our preventative work with counties. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how we plan to increase that in the next, in the coming biennium, because I believe that's really paid off. We've had, in the past 2.5 years, we've had only 3 appeals. When I first came to the Gorge Commission in 2001, there were 7 active appeals. And of the 3 appeals we've had in the last 2.5 years, we've settled 2 out of 3 of them. So one of the things that's interesting about that alternative dispute resolution number is, for example, you might see 50% cases settled, but that might be 2 cases. So one settled and one didn't.
I see.
So the number might not look great, but the reality is it's a lot better than it used to be. Or that it has been at certain points in the past. Another accomplishment that Commissioner Davis talked about is we streamline our certification process for economic development grants and loans. The Gorge Commission has the role of certifying that special money that was appropriated by the federal government complies with the Act and the Management Plan. It used to be that every one of those grants and loans had to go before the full Gorge Commission, taking up to 6 weeks to process. We heard from the economic development agencies that if we could do it in 7 to 14 days, that they could actually use that money a lot more effectively. So about 90% of our grants and loans now go through the streamlined process. I just mentioned that appeals to the Gorge Commission have been significantly reduced. And the other thing that we accomplished this biennium that's different from our past actions is that we've not just made a request that the federal government release money that was authorized in the Scenic Area Act, but we brought together a very diverse coalition of groups to help us jointly sponsor that request. And I believe that we passed out today a copy of the letter that we sent to Congress asking for release of those funds. And I gave you that letter not so much for the request, but just to show you that we've managed to get Friends of the Gorge and the economic development folks and the recreation folks all sitting down at the table together, local governments, and we send a single joint request as opposed to having each of these groups ask for their little pot of money by themselves. I also want to talk about what's going on that you might hear about today or tomorrow that might not be the greatest thing that you ever heard about us. We have 2 things going on that are very big challenges for us. The first is whether ballot measure 37 applies or not. We believe, the agency believes, that ballot measure 37 does not apply in the National Scenic Area because of the language in ballot measure 37 that says that regulations required by federal law are exempt from the measure. But there are certain interest groups and certain landowners who disagree with our point of view because they believe the commission is actually a state agency, a bi-state agency, and therefore it should apply. So we've actually sat down with the 3 Gorge counties, with the landowners, and with the interest groups who are involved on both sides to develop a legal strategy to try to get the courts to help us answer this question. And just last week, we filed a question before the courts to ask them to help us resolve whether it applies or not. Asking whether we've got litigation and then having us have to work with counties to file some isn't necessarily positive, but we wanted to get an answer to this question that's quick and cheap for all of the parties.
Sounds good. Representative Shaw.
Thank you. If it does apply, which I tend to agree with you, it doesn't apply. That's my layman's opinion. If it does apply, then it's just wide open. Then we don't even know where Measure 37 is. So are you taking any action proactive actions to deal with it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler.
Is the question of the court. Is that your action?
We believe that if ballot measure 37 does apply, it affects a lot more than just the regulations. It affects the bi-state compact, for example, with Washington. And so there's a number of other questions that come up if it applies. And so we have done some work to identify those questions, but we're not going to do any intensive labor on those questions until we get a good answer. I will also tell you that I believe that no matter what happens at the local court level, this is a question that will go to the Court of Appeals at least and maybe to the Supreme Court. So it may be some time before we have a definitive answer about this.
Very good.
The other thing you may hear about is that during the last biennium, we've worked on a guideline that affects the size of dwellings. And there was an Oregonian article last winter or January or so about a case in Multnomah County. what we've learned because of development pressures that are going on in the gorge is that, and the value of land, is folks want to build larger and larger buildings, not just houses. The way it comes across in the press is houses, but and we have a guideline in the management plan that directs that new development has to be compatible with existing development. And so when a building, whether it's a barn or an accessory building or a house, is significantly larger than the existing development, this guideline gets applied. The problem with the guideline is that it's fairly open-ended in terms of how a county might go about evaluating it. One of the things we try to do in the scenic area is we strive for six-county consistency in application of the rules. They don't have to apply the rules exactly the same, but we hope that the end result's the same. And so when we run up against an issue like this where we have a vague guideline that's being applied differently in different counties, we try to work solutions to bring some consistency to the scenic area. Initially, commission staff believed that the right way to do that was through the appeals process, and we appealed four cases, two in Clark County and two in Multnomah County, to try to get this guideline interpreted by hearings officers. However, upon further reflection and review after we went through the hearings at the county level, we discovered something that we often discover, which is when we're trying to figure out how to deal with a policy question in conjunction with the county, is the wrong way to do it is through a single development action that applies to a single landowner. And so we have worked cooperatively with those four landowners and settled all four cases. But we're still going to be in the process of needing to work with the commission and the Gorge counties to figure out what this compatibility guideline means. And if it doesn't mean anything, in other words, if we don't believe that size is an appropriate thing to regulate, then obviously we'll be repealing it. I have a feeling that we'll probably get some level of interpretation from the commission so that we can not have to amend the management plan, but figure out how to apply this consistently.
Do you currently have a limit on the size of homes?
Mr. Chair, no, we do not, and that's been part of the discussion. So when you start talking about what's compatible, you're talking about a standard that's not got an objective number attached to it.
If your permits are granted on the basis that certain guidelines are being followed in terms of blending in, so to speak,
right,
paints and trees and sizes and so forth, why would you care? If it blends in, why would you care about the size of the home?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. And I think that's the debate that we need to have before the Gorge Commission. And I've talked to a lot of folks about this since this issue came up. And what I generally hear from folks is, you know it when you see it. You know when you've got something that's too big when you see it. But the problem is, that's not fair.
And isn't that subjective?
Exactly.
Though?
And so
each individual?
So I think the question becomes, if we want to have something because we believe there is a threshold point at which something is really too big, then we need to be able to talk about that in policy terms, not just in terms of other stuff that has gone before.
And what is the average size of the square footage of homes that are being approved by the commission? Do you have
Mr. Chair, approved by the commission? Well, we only directly approve in Klickitat County, and in general, okay, we haven't seen this larger building problem that far east yet. But we see a range of houses from 1,500 square feet to the largest one I've seen recently was a proposal for a 7,000 square foot building. Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I don't believe that one's been approved yet. That one's pending in Clark County.
Yes, please.
It does seem to me that, you could have a substantially large house, but if it's very carefully camouflaged,
yeah,
and hidden in the landscape, it wouldn't be a problem. By the same token, a much smaller house that's built,
yes,
in such a way that it sticks out like a sore thumb would be visible all over the place, and so size alone should not be necessarily chiseled into the law.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think you're essentially correct that there are a number of design issues that come into play about whether a building blends in. I will tell you that the bigger a building becomes, the harder it is to hide. And I think that's what I was trying to say before, is there's probably a point at which there's a balance, and that's what we don't have right now because counties are applying this very vague guideline differently.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Continue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
That problem isn't unique to the Gorge. I mean, look at all your planned communities have these problems, and they do a good job. Sun River, Eagle Crest, and they don't restrict by size. They look at the property or specific property you're looking at. They control colors, roof size, you know, external architecture, heights. And people will do it because they want their property values to be maintained. They want a nice place. So what's...
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we know of several examples, and we know that we're not the only place in the world that's struggling. We had a discussion recently with the city of Lake Oswego that's had some internal community controversy about houses on the lake and can you block people's views of the lake. And so we know we're not the only ones struggling with this. And I do think that there are a lot of different design issues that we can look at to address the question of making sure development blends in.
Mr. Schaffler.
Mr. Chair, it's more of a comment. When you're in a community, you're looking at resale value as well. You're out here on 50 or 100 acres, and you got the money. Blend size is an issue. I think that's the difference between a planned community with building covenants as opposed to something out here. Anyway, points.
Please continue. Thanks.
All right, now I want to talk about money. the Gorge Commission has two programs that show up in your budget. And the first program, the little blue wedge, is the Gorge Commission Commissioner Expenses Program. There's two things in it. About roughly $21,000 of it is the commissioner expenses, the per diem, and actual expenses for the six Oregon commissioners. And the remaining $40,500 is the risk management charge that DAS has assessed the agency. The other portion...
Wait a moment. Risk management charge. We have a relatively small budget. Your budget is $870,000. That's 5% of your budget is a risk management charge from gas. What is so risky about you all that you have to have 5% of your budget go to gas for?
Make a basket answer that.
We've missed you, Senator. It's glad to have you back.
Well, you know, I'm kind of a dastard.
You are.
Would
you like to have a... Please, please.
For the record, I'm Jim Gorse, Budget Management. That is a question that we are currently trying to pursue to get to the bottom of. From conversations I've had with DAS, the risk division, they apply a formula, and based on prior litigation, et cetera, and due to a case that these folks had back in 19...
I can talk about that.
Yeah.
We settled it in 2002.
Yeah, it's the B case, and they settled in 2002. Due to the way that formula is set up, it bumps up their risk assessment due to that litigation.
So it's kind of like a workers' comp experience rating.
That's a car wreck.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the state of Oregon is self-insured. So when an agency experiences a loss, the payment comes out of the risk pool and then is recovered later from the agency. And in this case, the Gorge Commission experienced a loss in settling a case with the B family and had to make payments. And so now the agency has to repay that to the fund so that we can continue to be self-insured. So it's a loss that they incurred.
What was that settlement?
It was settled in 2002, and the Gorge Commission's share of the settlement was $150,000. 50% was paid by Oregon, and 50% was paid by Washington. It is the only successful tort claim that's ever been filed against the agency.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue.
The remainder of our program, $806,929, is our agency operations program, and this is what you might hear me refer to as the joint program. This is the portion of our budget that is split 50% between Oregon and Washington. So Oregon pays its own commissioners, Washington pays its own commissioners, but you jointly fund the agency operations. The agency operations at $809,929 are really dominated by personnel expenses. 75.4% of our budget goes into personnel, those 6.25 FTE. I will tell you that the biggest biggest cost we've seen happen in the agency is the change in our health care coverage. When I was taking a look at those numbers, it was at the beginning of the current biennium, it was about $500 a month per employee, and at the beginning of the next biennium, it will be over $650 a month per employee. So we've had significant increase in our health coverage. Our other major categories, we have the internal service charges are about 7% of our budget. Those are the things that were charged by the state of Washington's equivalent of DAS and DAS for things like accounting and auditing. About 3% of our budget goes into legal, and I will tell you that some of that legal fees isn't just legal and traditional litigation service, but, for example, if we use a mediator for alternative dispute resolution or something else, that comes out of the legal budget. About 15% of our budget is operations and supplies, exciting things like rent and materials, and then about 1% of our budget, or around $15,000, goes into travel. You saw the gorge. It's 83 miles long. We cover a lot of territory, and so we actually think that our travel budget is relatively modest because we got to cover a lot of territory with not that much money.
So you're not flying everybody to Hawaii for a conference or anything?
Mr. Chair, about the most exciting places we go are Salem and Olympia.
Can't have our sympathies.
The governor's budget includes one policy option package I'd like to briefly talk about. It's an increase over the base budget of $137,133. It has been matched by Washington. That's the other thing I want to mention, is the Washington budget has passed, and they have passed the joint operating program at approximately $850,000 for the upcoming biennium. So they have matched at this point what the governor's recommended budget includes. This policy option package really has five goals. The first goal is for us to respond quickly to citizen requests and improve the quality of services. We get a wide range of citizen requests, everything from asking for development approval to more complicated requests like expanding urban area boundaries or amending the management plan. We also want to continue to increase our prevention and problem-solving services. You heard me talk earlier about the fact that one of the key things we do is work early with counties to try to prevent appeals. We need to continue to do this, and we need to do this on more cases than we do right now. We believe this would be the single best thing we could do to prevent litigation. We have some outdated plans and inventory, as I'll talk about in a little bit, that we need to update. We need to increase our code compliance and enforcement services. And last but not least, at the end of plan review this last time, we had a few policy topics that it's turned out we really truly do need to address that we weren't able to get done during our plan review project. So this would add two FTE, and those FTE would be devoted to those five things I just talked about.
Martha, just briefly, plan review was a fairly major exercise for you, was it not? And I would think it would involve most of your agency personnel.
Mr. Chair, yes, it was about a 3.5-year project, and it took probably a third to half of the agency's resources during those 3.5 years.
Okay, and so that process has been completed, correct?
Mr. Chair, we have terminated. Yeah, we ended the project.
And how soon will you have to engage in that again?
Mr. Chair, the Act requires us to do it every 5 to 10 years.
5 to 10 years.
So if it took that amount of time and staff and energy to do that, and you've completed it, and at the same time, you've been able to, I am going to hopefully not prematurely give you too much praise here, but sounds like you're doing a good job in reducing your appeals and working with counties to try to get to some of these issues before they become problems. And I think that's a very good strategy. So I guess I would question why you would need additional people to address your outstanding policy topics, because now your plan review is complete, and so you have a lot more staff time available to do that responsibly.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you will, the issue is, I guess the issue is sort of twofold. One is the National Scenic Area Act has a number of mandates, and I can give you a long list of them, but not right now because I don't have them memorized, of services that we're required to perform. And I would tell you that we're tackling many of them, but a lot of them at a much lower level than we need to be tackling them. And so sooner or later, we're going to have a significant problem because we're not addressing one of the mandates in the Act. Second is, although we ended plan review, there were a lot of citizen expectations that we would address certain types of issues that we never get to. Let me give you sort of the example that was on my desk Friday afternoon, because that's about as far as my brain can go right now. I had a gentleman in my office who owns property on the west end of the gorge that's zoned high-value farmland. And he's had his property evaluated by several extension service agents and the Soil Conservation Service, and they tell him it's not high-value farmland. Well, he needs an avenue to come talk to the Gorge Commission about whether his property can be rezoned, because we've designated it for one type of development that's really not viable. Well, right now there's no avenue for him to do that other than coming to us for an amendment to the management plan. So that was an issue that we needed to address during the plan review process we didn't get to. And what I had to tell him Friday was that there are 4 plan amendment applications ahead of him. They take 4 to 6 months each. I think I can process 3 of those in a year. So it's going to be a year plus some months before I can get to his topic. So one of the reasons we need additional staff is to be able to respond to those kinds of requests. Because he feels that the regulations applied to his property are unfair, and he, in my view, deserves a chance to make his case. Whether he's right or wrong, I can't tell you today because I haven't seen his stuff. But right now, I don't have the ability as an agency to give him a timely response to his request. So that's one example of something that's mandated that we do in the Act that we just aren't keeping up with as an agency.
So when you're saying you're going to have a problem down the road sooner or later, I would assume that relates to someone suing the Gorge Commission because you're not fulfilling the mandates of the Act.
Mr. Chair, that's my belief, yes.
And is there something within the Act then that says if funding is not available, then you don't have to fulfill all those mandates? Just curious.
Mr. Chair, no, the Act does not say that.
We work
from that assumption. but no, Mr. Chair, that.
No cover there for you.
Correct.
Okay, fair enough.
Next, I want to cover the agency's priorities, and I'm sorry for doing this in a pie chart, but every time I put this on a single slide, I couldn't find a beautiful way to do it, so I did it this way. We have 8 agency. We've broken the total down into 8 priorities. The first 2 priorities are obviously the commissioner expenses. The truth is that if the commission doesn't exist and function well, then nothing the agency can do can make up for the lack of that policy body. The third agency priority is to implement the management plan. That includes our assistance to Gorge counties and also working cooperatively with state agencies. It includes our administration of an ordinance in any county that doesn't directly administer the management plan through their code, which right now is just Klickitat County. We're required to review county ordinances. If a county amends their code, we have to review those to make sure it's consistent with the scenic area. It also includes requests for urban area boundary revisions and amendments to the management plan and anything work that we do on agency rules. The next priority is our appeals function. One of the mandates of the Act is that we serve as an appeals body. In Oregon, for example, in the Gorge counties, if someone appeals a land use decision of the county, instead of going to the Land Use Board of Appeals, it goes to the Gorge Commission. And it's probably one of the keys, although we like to prevent appeals, it's one of the keys in ensuring consistent implementation of the management plan throughout the Gorge. Our fifth priority is our monitoring of the management plan. That includes our work with the counties to make sure that their decisions comply with the management plan, and our technical outreach to counties, and the small amount of work that we're able to achieve in terms of evaluating the status of resources. Last but not least, the smallest of our 6 priorities is our economic development function. We really have a fairly narrow role in economic development. As I mentioned before, we certify grants and loans, but we also work with the state agencies on their economic development plans. So when they're in the policy level, which they do about every 5 years, we work with them to make sure that their plans are consistent with the National Scenic Area Act. Okay. That's all I wanted to say about money.
Okay.
I want to talk briefly about what we hope to get done in the next biennium. And really the three things on a broad level is, you know, we obviously want to help people. The second is we want to minimize appeals and litigation. And then last but not least, we hope to tackle some of the long-range projects that are out there that we've never really gotten to. On a stakeholders level, the first thing, the most important thing that we want to get done is finish the scenic handbook. And what the scenic handbook is, and it responds directly to one of the budget notes that we got last session, is basically a toolkit for folks who are applying for new development in the scenic area. We are going to evaluate colors, materials, types of landscaping that we believe would be easy to have approved in the scenic area.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I talked earlier about the pre-application conversation, and you all responded, and I believe you, that you didn't have all the data for that. I think all the data for that would make your argument a lot stronger, because it's probably not the great big numbers of denial or people walking away frustrated that I may think. And the stronger, I mean, I want to protect this beautiful place, but I really think that would be something you would want to. I know you don't have any extra money, but if I were you, that's what I'd want. So they can come here and say 87% of people that wanted the bill got to, and there were some denials, and there were some that walked away with pre-application meetings frustrated, but that's the way it goes, or whatever the number might be. So just a statement, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Fair enough.
The next thing we want to do is part of the policy option package, which is increase our capacity to respond to a wide variety of types of citizen requests. I talked about, for example, the ag land. I know that there is another major example coming, which is the Klickitat County is going to be applying to enlarge the Lyle community's urban area boundary. That's going to be a significant amount of work. But that's one example. We've been working with ODOT because they're going to be rebuilding, depending on the day of the week, between 20 and 27 bridges in the scenic area. There are special scenic area regulations that apply to transportation projects. We're trying to make sure that those are all addressed up front so that they have a quick permitting process. And they've been very helpful. And we're working on something called a corridor strategy that we hope will streamline not only the bridge projects but all future transportation projects on I-84. We also expect to be working with three counties on long-range planning efforts. Two in Oregon, both Wasco County and Hood River County, are working with their city governments on periodic review. And, for example, the community of Hood River has just started their vacant lands inventory. They already believe they're going to need to add land because of the 20-year land supply for residential units. We're going to have to work cooperatively with them to make sure that they get an urban area boundary expansion when they need it as quickly and efficiently as possible. Last but not least, we expect to work with other folks to try to secure federal funds for economic development, recreation, and other projects in the gorge. The next category is to minimize appeals and litigation. We, as I mentioned before, we work with counties early in the development review process to flag problems before they become problems. Right now, our target and one of our benchmarks is to get about 50% of those. During the last biennium, we've gotten a slightly higher percentage than that. That just tells you a little bit about what kinds of development has come through, because what we do is when an application comes in, we run it through a screen, and if it's not something that causes us to panic, then we don't look at it. It just happens to be that in the last biennium, more stuff has been caught by our screen, but we need to do more of that because we've had a couple of appeals in counties on stuff that we normally would filter out, and so we clearly need to do some more work with the counties on that to try to catch those things before they end up in an appeals process.
Thank you. I guess not you may not necessarily filter them out. You may just amend them and help work with the parties to try and get to where they want to go and at the same time accomplish your mission.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, what I meant by filter them out is right now, for example, we look at all new single-family dwellings and we look at additions over a certain number of square feet. What I meant by that is sometimes an application might come through for, a lot line adjustment, and we might not look at that because it actually doesn't involve physical development. But you are correct that our goal in that is to work cooperatively with the county and with the applicant to say, look, you know, if you moved your building back 10 feet, you probably could get approved, but if you leave it on the bluff edge, you're going to run into problems.
Thank you.
We also provide technical assistance work to the Gorge counties. Because we regulate natural resources and cultural resources, there is a lot of stuff that happens that the counties don't have staff on board who know how to deal with. So we, for example, have good expertise and work with the Forest Service, for example, on archaeological information. Because there has been human habitation in the Gorge for 10,000 years, we do have archaeological sites, and we can help the counties through that part of the process. We hope to increase our clearance rate for enforcement cases. Right now, we are able to resolve, I mean close the file. I don't necessarily mean we take it in action, but we close the file on about 50% of the cases that get reported to us. We believe that's a significant problem. First of all, that means the backlog continues to increase. If I get 11 complaints and I only close the file on 6 of them, then I've still got 5 waiting for me next biennium. But we also believe this is a significant public relations issue, frankly. People look and see whether we mean it and whether we enforce the rules. And they also look and see if they bother to call us up and complain, do we actually do anything? And do anything might be just do an investigation and find out that there's not really a violation. But our goal is to clear 100% of those cases. And then last but not least, assuming we get some appeals, we'd like to be able to evaluate the effectiveness of our new appeals rules. This also responds to one of the Oregon budget maps.
Chair.
Yes. Senator.
Thank you. What's the longest that you have a case open right now? Do you have any idea? You have
Chair, Senator Bates.
What does that wait list look like?
I have a case that I know has been pending for 7 years. This particular case, well, the good news is this particular case, one of the reasons it's been postponed is because the damage has been done and there's no ongoing damage. So, and frankly, the only damage really is to the person who did it. So in many ways, it's...
Apropos?
Well, it's one of those things where enforcing may be just rubbing somebody's nose in it. We on average get 11 to 12 reported violations a year, and we're able to work on between 5 and 7 of them. So every year our backlog grows by 4 to 6 cases.
Follow us. If people get the sense that they can violate whatever code you have and basically get put on a waiting list, do you lose your authority?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's what we're concerned about. That's one of the reasons that we would, as I mentioned before, we would direct some additional staff to this compliance function. And I really view this as a compliance function, not as an enforcement function. Sometimes you actually have to take an aggressive enforcement action, but oftentimes folks don't know they're in violation.
Well, Mr. Chair. So when you find something in violation, you look at the case, what authority do you have to stop them from doing what they're doing, or do you have them do mediation? Or mitigation even, what do you do? I mean, how do you handle a problem that's occurring and you want to stop it? Do you have the authority to do that? And how do you enforce that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we have a set of rules that govern it. We do have the ability, if necessary, to go to court to get some kind of action. We normally don't do that until after we've exhausted all of our other remedies. In general, we try a compliance approach, which we sit down with the property owner and say, here's what we see going on, here's what we'd like you to do about it. Probably 85% of our cases are resolved that way. We also have a civil process. We can take cases to the Gorge Commission themselves, and they can issue an order, which might include a civil penalty. Oftentimes, the commission uses civil penalties as an incentive. For example, they'll say, we're going to fine you $400, but if you comply by X date, then we waive that penalty. So that's basically how we approach those cases. If it's something very urgent, we can, for example, if somebody's taken a bulldozer to a cultural site, we can go to court and get an injunction.
Representative Schaffer.
So, I mean, in the contracting world, the inspector comes out and puts literally a red tag on your project. Is that what you're talking about here?
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, we generally can't red tag somebody. We would have to go to court and get an injunction. Sometimes, if it's something that's going on completely without permit, including without a building permit, we can work with the local building official and get them to red tag it. Last but not least, we hope to tackle a couple long-term projects. We have a recreation plan that was developed in 1991 that's never been updated. We have a lot of new sports. We have a lot of new users. We have a lot of impacts going on in the Gorge that are unmanaged, so we hope to update that plan. We also have natural resource inventories that we've been working on since 1990. Those we know are outdated, and we need to update those and integrate them with what the counties are doing. We also have been working on trying to develop scenic area benchmarks. I do have performance measures to talk to you about, but those are really agency performance measures, and what we'd like to do is be able to come back to you and say 95% of the natural resources in the gorge have been saved, you know, 10 years from now. So a little bit of a higher level benchmarks. This is something that's also mandated by the Act that we've never gotten to. All right, now I want to talk about performance measures. I handed out a yellow sheet of paper. Before I talk about that, I'd like to sort of hit the high notes. We think we're exceeding our targets in our preventative work, that is monitoring the county decisions, and in our work in preserving ag land for ag uses. We've met two of our benchmarks that we're pretty excited about. We've certified 100% of grants and loans, which means we're in good communication with the economic development agencies. We haven't bumped up against a problem. And we've successfully worked with other folks to get the federal appropriations requests every year. We're making improvement in our outreach to community groups and in making sure we're measuring our success in involving those folks and in meeting our permit deadlines. And then, as I mentioned before, our outcomes on alternative dispute resolution look low from our targets, but it really reflects the fact that our appeals volumes are low. Now, if you'd like, I'll walk through them quickly. The first one is the number of cultural resources sites and natural resources sites identified during and protected during the development review process. We've actually requested deletion of this performance measure. The reason we've requested deletion is because we can't actually approve a development if there's harm to natural resources or cultural resources. So the reality is 100% of them are going to show up as protected. It's not going to tell you what it is we're trying to do. We've worked in a possible alternative, and that alternative would be to measure the number of developments that required a mitigation plan for cultural or natural, and that would at least tell you whether there was potential for harm, even if it wouldn't tell you whether there was actually harm. The next is the percentage of residential development that occurs in urban areas. As I mentioned before, that tells us how successful are we in helping focus growth.
What you're proposing as an amendment to performance measure number one is the number of developments that
required a mitigation plan. We only require mitigation plans if someone is going to, if someone cannot avoid a known natural resource or cultural resource site. So if your development proposal by its nature has to encroach on a wetland, for example, you have to prepare a mitigation plan. And that would tell you that at least there was potential harm to natural resources, even if it wouldn't show up as an adverse effect.
Okay. So what we would need to know, I think, in that situation would be the total number of permits, and then as a subset,
okay, the
number of them that would require a mitigation plan. So that we can, we know what the...
You know what the box is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, second benchmark is the one about is growth happening in the urban areas. You know, up until 2 years ago, it looked like Oregon was just doing great on this particular performance measure. Now the numbers dropped. I don't know if the numbers dropped because it's more attractive to build in the scenic area or because development slowed down during 2003 or 2004. It's certainly something we're going to be watching. And on the flip side, development inside the urban areas in Washington has actually increased as a percentage of total development. So we appear to be closer to target in Washington than we are in Oregon. The next one is percentage of grants and loans that we certify. And as I mentioned before, this one really measures whether we're communicating effectively with those agencies. And so far, so good. The next one is, this is new data, and I apologize for getting it to you late, but frankly, we had to relook at how we were collecting certain data to be able to measure this, and we, I think, finally got it square. We're measuring what percentage of developments approved on ag land actually preserve the ag land for future ag use so that we're not seeing conversion to some other use, whether it's residential or something else. And our target in general has been that 95% of decisions do that. We're exceeding our target in every year except for 1999. The next one is the same except for forest land. And there, we have a lot fewer developments that happen on forest land, so you're going to see greater variability in those numbers. But in general, except for 2002, we're on target there.
Madam Chair, please. Get used to seeing Mr. Chair in your absence. Can you still log in this area? When you talk about forest management, are you talking about thinning for fire protection and stuff like that too, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Shuffler, yes, you can, and in fact, you can still log, and in fact, the Gorge Commission is not allowed to interfere with state forest practices. And so, in general, what I'm concerned about on forest land is any use, not thinning, but any use that would cause someone to no longer manage their land for forest purposes. For example, that we did see one development in 2004 that converted some commercial forest land to a campground. And it's my belief that it's not impossible to manage the campground for forest practices, but it's unlikely that that will be the primary management of the land in the future. The next one is when I talked about percentage of appeals that are resolved through alternative dispute resolution. As I mentioned before, we believe we're improving on this, but because the volume of appeals has dropped, that performance measure we also believe is going to be much more variable in future years if the volume of appeals stays low. So if I only have two appeals and one settles, well, it's only 50%, but it's better than it would have been in 2001 when I had seven appeals. The next one is percentage of participants in presentations made by the commission to civic groups that say they have a better understanding. Our goal there is to make sure that not only are we doing outreach, but that we're doing effective outreach. We have seen some pretty steady improvement there. We're not at target yet. It may not be in 2005, but we believe we'll be at target by 2006. The next one is the number of citizens, and this is actually one where we did not ask for change, but I'd like you to consider a change upon looking at it. Is change the word number to percentage of citizens surveyed at commission meetings who feel are fairly treated. And what we're trying to measure there is our public involvement process working. So when folks feel they need to bring an issue to the commission, do they feel like, even if the commission didn't do exactly what they wanted, were they heard? Did the commission take their issue seriously?
You know what? Maybe a way to look at this, because I think that we're also going to be interested in the number of people to see whether the line's going up or down. So maybe the number of people that you survey and then the percentage
okay.
who feel that they are treated fairly.
Okay. I will mention to you that we're also working on, but I don't have yet available to me, a way to track satisfaction at the end of the permit process and also satisfaction at the end of the appeals process, but I don't yet have a tool that's going to work. And when I do, I'll come talk to you about whether that's a better customer service measure than this one. The next one is percentage of county development decisions that are reviewed during the permitting process. This is one where, as I mentioned, we're exceeding target, but we think we're exceeding target because of the types of developments that we're seeing. But we also believe that we should be doing more of, even more of this than we're doing now.
Chair. Representative Shaw.
Thank you. I do tend to concentrate on the development side just because it's my personal trait, I guess. But I think, I don't know if you can even do this, I'd imagine there's a lot of landowners inside the area that are very much interested in just keeping it forest or bluff. I don't know if there's any way you can measure their performance measurement to their happiness with what you're doing. You see where I'm going with this? Because I do concentrate on the development side, I confess. It's it goes, but there has to be a whole spectrum. If we could measure the whole spectrum, maybe impossible, I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative Shuffler, we talked a while ago about a general sort of public satisfaction measure, but what we found is that to do that effectively and consistently, we need to do a scientific survey every year, and at this point, we just don't have budget to do that. The next one is both 10 and 11 are ones that we were trying to measure with 10 and 11 sort of our ability to work to help bring technical assistance and create greater six-county consistency. But what we're finding is all we're doing is tracking meetings, and so we actually recommend deletion of 11, but we got some indication that co-chairs might be interested in deleting 10 as well, and frankly, we would support that. We don't believe this is actually giving you useful information about agency performance. So 10 and 11, I guess I'd recommend that you, I request that you delete. 12 is how well we're doing at getting requests to Congress every year for the federal authorizations in the Scenic Area Act. And even though it's a simple measure, I think it helps you know whether we're doing our function in advocating for those additional federal resources.
Well, I think not so much knowing that you're writing one letter every year, but what we are interested in is how much federal appropriation you're receiving as the result of your efforts.
Show us the money.
Madam Chair, let me think about how you might measure that, because we ask for about 7 different categories of funds, and some of them are relatively have been historically relatively easy to secure, some more difficult. So let me think about how to get you there.
Okay, even a total amount,
okay,
so we can gauge how effective you're being at lobbying for that money.
And then the 13th one is and one we've also recommended deletion of, because we don't think, first of all, it's very difficult to track because there's a lot of projects out there that are going on that we don't know about until long after they're done. But second of all, it's not really telling you much of anything about how the agency is performing to know whether we supported a project or not. So we'd recommend that you delete that. And then last but not least is one that we added to measure how well we were doing and getting permits out on time. I think we added it during the work session process last biennium. And frankly, we think we're doing significantly better. We did have a blip in 2003 with having 2 permits take longer than 150 days, but both of those permits had archaeological sites on it. And so we think that will be an anomaly.
Representative Shaw. And then I'd just like to see a comparison as this, you know, to the state as a whole. Because, I mean, within 102 and 150 days, obviously you're perfect. And the other two had what, petroglyphs or something? Or?
Well, they had archaeological sites on them.
Yeah, so obviously that's not your common building permit issue.
And then we've added a standard customer service measure to all the agencies. I'm wondering if that would work for this one as well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're going to add it anyway and during the interim work to see how well it works for the for all agencies. There may be some that it just doesn't make any sense, but we'll attempt it.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, on each of these percentage ones, it would be a lot more meaningful to me to sort of get a glimpse of what the commission has to do, if you'd include in that percentage what the universe was, what, you know, 75% of what number, you know,
okay,
300 applications, 200 applications, whatever it was, you know, all these categories would be a lot more. I mean, you got the number, obviously. But if we knew the number, it'd be really nice to see.
I'd be happy to provide that.
Give you a scope of the work you're doing.
I think that any time that we've got just a percentage, it's really helpful for us to know a percentage of what, so we can see how the main trend is going and then how actually what we're measuring is going.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Any more issues on performance measures?
Oh, I think they've done a gorgeous job.
Where's Senator
Shields? Senator Shields is here. I'm feeling where my pants.
I'm sorry, it's on tape already.
Strike that from the record.
He just encourages him, doesn't he?
Perfect.
Reward bad behavior there.
Last but not least, I'm just going to cover the 10% cut impacts. Reduction of the budget by 10% eliminates a position and a half. The general effects of that reduction are slowdown in responding to citizen requests, increased potential for appeals and litigation, and this is one I talk about gingerly, an increased risk of harm to gorge resources. I can't tell you that for sure tomorrow some scenery will be destroyed, but I can tell you that if we're not tracking this stuff, there is at least a greater potential than there is today.
Hey, when you talk about increased delays in responding to citizen requests, can you quantify that for us? How many days are we talking about delays?
Madam Chair, it depends on the type of request. I covered an example before. For example, if someone requests amendment to the management plan today, we're tackling about, we think we can process about 3 of those in a calendar year. And so the 4th person who comes in the door waits 12 months to have his request processed. If it's an application for new development, then in general, we're getting it into that 72 to 150-day window. There's other types of complex requests we get, and just depending on how much process is required by our rules or where it falls in the overall work plan will depend on what the type of delay is.
In Water Resources Department, they developed a second queue for people seeking water rights. If you had the money to go out and hire experts to do it, have you all explored anything like that here? So it would take the burden off of you guys, get the queue moving for those that don't want to do this, and then have some. I mean, there must be some way to apply that to this too, I think. I'd hope. Or maybe not.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, it's an interesting idea. I don't think we've ever thought about it as an agency in terms of what we could delegate to an applicant in terms of analysis as opposed to what we would have to still do internally. And I hesitate to give you a flip answer because I think in some cases we already sort of do that in terms of what burden we place on somebody to prepare information. For example, if you want to expand an urban area boundary, we require the applicant to provide a whole bunch of data. But that still doesn't relieve the staff from finally have to doing the analysis or the Gorge Commission from having to do its required public process.
Okay. Thank you. I think we should move on everything.
I left it here with my two favorite quotes about a gorge. So.
Down the loose
drive. Yes.
Now I'll turn it over to Mr. Gorse. Give us the view from budget and management.
Okay. For the record, once again, Jim Gorse, Department of Administrative Services, Budget Management. What I will do is just give you a very quick overview.
Yeah.
Of the Columbia River Gorge Commission and how it fits with the rest of the state. First off, on the presentation I have on page 2, you'll see that the Columbia River Gorge Commission doesn't even register on the budget, basically. I meant to actually go back just to, for hilarity's sake, if nothing else, to find out what 0.1 or 0.2% of the budget they are, but at any rate, it comes to 0% in the all funds budget. When it came to the governor's principal budget, they fell under the livability and environment principle. This agency on page 4 is an entirely general funded agency. The governor's recommended budget total is $869,247 total funds. And on page 5, you kind of see how Martha's already given you this, the breakout between the joint expenses, in other words, what we share with Washington, and the commissioner's expenses, which is just the expenses for the Oregon commissioners. That was about 7%, and the joint expenses are about 93%. As was touched on earlier, all the employees that are in this agency are on the Washington side, so as opposed to most all of the other agencies, you'll see these guys do not have any personal services because we split those costs between us and Washington, the official Washington employees. On page 7, you can kind of see the history of their budget. You can see for the last two or three biennium, they've been slowly decreasing their budget a little bit. The governor's recommended budget this time puts in basically enough for one planner, which I will talk about in a second.
So how much does the planner cost?
The planner costs about $137,000, $133,000, somewhere in there.
Okay.
In the presentation. Yeah.
And then the rest of it is the liability insurance?
There's a $40,000 charge in the, approximately $40,000 charge in the commissioner's segment of this budget that is related to a gas risk assessment.
Yeah, we covered that pretty extensively.
Okay.
I was very curious about that.
And there's still work going on that, too, just so you're aware of that. As far as major policy issues, as you can imagine, meeting the demands of the public for this agency is rather difficult. I guess what I've always
been amazed with this is the commission is charged with protecting the scenic, cultural, recreational, and natural resources while encouraging compatible growth and economic development within the scenic area. I don't know how anybody can succeed at that and make friends at the same time. So these guys are constantly, no matter which side of the issue they take, they're always getting criticized. So that is it's one difficult thing for these folks.
It's impossible.
Another policy issue is just maintenance of services, as with any agency in Oregon right now with budget problems. Everybody's struggling, and so are these guys are definitely not alone. Implementation of a revised management plan, which we talked about earlier, and then the work plan, which was discussed earlier also. And finally, the policy packages. The commission has one policy package, which would provide for an additional planner. On the governor's side, we felt that this is one of the very few agencies that actually got a policy package at all. It came out of the recommended budget. And the reason why is we felt that this was a good investment to stave off liability issues in the future. With that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
I have one question. I'm asking you to guess. I guess it isn't even fair. Had you had that planner, would you have avoided the lawsuit that we lost for that, that brought about the risk management assessment?
I knew it. Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, no, I don't believe so. And the actions, just so you're aware, the actions of the agency that resulted in that litigation took place in 1997. Well, let me answer that question more thoughtfully. Actually, that was a time...
Madam Chair, may I help a little bit? If you'd had them last biennium, it wouldn't have made any difference. But from going from here on out, it may. Well,
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, what we weren't doing when that lawsuit happened is we weren't doing the preventative monitoring work that I talked about. And although that lawsuit was successful, there were a number of other appeals that ended up in front of the commission and ultimately went to a court, whether it just didn't involve a tort claim, that probably wouldn't have happened if we had been doing the preventative work that we began doing in January of 2001. Once we started doing that preventative work, we saw the number of appeals, both within counties and also to the commission, that also resulted in litigation in court, drop significantly. Representative Krupp asked me a question earlier about litigation, and I can give him sort of the broad brush answer, which is in 2001 we had roughly 14 lawsuits that were active. Now we have around 7. It's not gone, nor do I expect that our litigation will ever be gone, because as Mr. Gores explained, we're sort of trying to meet expectations of groups that fundamentally disagree. But I think that we've been able to work both cooperatively with parties, but also work cooperatively in the process with the county governments to prevent some lawsuits from coming in the first place.
Mr. Gores, help me to understand this, and I apologize for coming in so late in the session, but you've got a governor's recommended budget of about $870,000. If I take away the legislatively approved budget at $630,000, I come up with $240,000. You have a package for a planner at $137,000 and liability insurance at $40,000. Which takes me to 177. There's like 60 some thousand left over. Where does that go?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is inflation built into the budget as well.
But that's like 10%.
Madam Chair, this. I'm trying to remember specifically. I can dig more deeply into this if you'd like me to, and I'd be happy to break it out for you. I think what Susie's touching on, too, is there's inflation, and because these folks don't have personnel on the Washington side, their inflation factor is a little higher. And I can't remember exactly what that percentage was, but we had to take... a chunk and try and figure out what we what their salary should increase, just as if for all the other agencies we've got COLA increases and just basically step increases included for this new budget. We had to go through and try and figure that out for this agency too. And so it would be a little higher than the standard 2.4 for standard inflation or even 16% for the AG costs that we're seeing, if that makes any sense at all.
It does, but it's too fuzzy. I need it to be more focused down. I'm just real curious because I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000, which is about 10% of their 03-05 budget that's got to be in there somewhere, but I don't know where it is.
Can
you help me find it out?
We can.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bates.
The budgets share equally by Washington Oregon, 50-50.
Correct.
So we're paying half of their salaries, in essence, and they're paying half of ours. Were they on a salary freeze the last couple of years? On their sides.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, the state of Washington did not impose a salary freeze, but we have imposed one in the agency. So we've had no step increases or cost of living increases in the agency in the biennium.
I may not know where this problem is, but I'm guessing where it's at. If there's been an increase on the salaries on the other side of the river more than it has on our side, and it's well above the 10% mark. And as a result, you know, we're paying half of that over there as our half, too. Look into it. Maybe that's where your problem is.
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, I will provide you the breakout of the increases.
Follow up. So is it federal law requiring us to pay their half and they pay their half, we pay our half, or is this just an agreement we've reached, or I mean, we're basically writing checks for somebody we have no control over?
Discussion about
Quick Attack
County yet?
No,
we have not.
I know what
side
of the river it's on.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, the requirements that Oregon fund 50% in Washington are part of the interstate compact that's signed by the two states. I believe it's also in the act, actually.
Probably in the act.
And just to throw another monkey wrench into the proceedings, there's a county in Washington that refuses to take part in the compact, and so we're essentially paying half of their costs also.
Where Stevenson is?
No.
Oh, who is it? White Salmon?
What is the county?
Madam Chair, it's Klickitat County. Stevenson's in Skamania County. Right. White Salmon is in Klickitat County.
It's White Salmon,
County.
Sir. Yeah. Okay. It's real warm and fuzzy all over, I know.
Madam Chair, you know, maybe we ought to just build like crazy in that county.
Well,
forgive theirs.
Didn't we put something in the budget last biennium to deal with that situation?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we did direct the agency to look into charging fees to people who request development in Klickitat County to recover some of that cost, and the agency has been working on that. Their new management plan gives them the authority to charge a fee, but I don't know where they're at in the process.
Madam Chair, yes, we just adopted rules that enable the Gorge Commission to charge fees, and we do need to go back to the commission about establishing a fee schedule. I will tell you that adopting the rules, we got significant negative. I'm not telling you we won't do it. I'm telling you we got significant public feedback from the Klickitat County residents about not wanting us to charge fees.
So I think it would be reasonable for us to back those costs that are part of the appropriation.
Are we required to allot it to...
Currently, Madam Chair, Senator Bates, we are required to pay those costs.
What's the legal authority for the interstate compact, the federal law? I can point out their population is twice as big as ours on the other side of the river, too.
Well, the federal law requires...
Their state budget is twice as big as ours, too.
That's right. Yeah, it is. What's the federal law require? You don't understand?
The federal law requires that the state of Oregon pay 50% of the cost to implement the act. And that includes the development permits in each of the counties. Now, all of the counties except for Klickitat have adopted
their own ordinances to do that development review and issue those permits under the management, under the Scenic Management Act. And Clickitat County has refused to do that because they do not agree with that Scenic Management Act. And all the negotiating that the Gorge has done to get the county to develop, I mean, to adopt their own ordinances has fallen by the wayside. So the only recourse that we have then would be to charge a fee for that development, and the state of Washington and the state of Oregon would both benefit from that 50-50.
So the county can succeed from the union, but we can't. I mean, essentially, you can ignore a federal situation.
If the federal law required the county to adopt ordinances and do that, then they would be required to do that, but the law does not, and all of the counties in Oregon and Washington, except for that one county, are being cooperative in doing that because they think they can serve their citizenry better than an outside agency.
Put the fees on them.
Well, I would be very interested in getting an accounting on the roll-up costs. I think that we need to look at that very finitely, because I'm not real interested in paying anything more than what our actual Oregon roll-up costs.
And Madam Chair, ma'am?
Representative Shaw.
I'm very interested in fees that not one Oregonian has to pay. Forget it, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Oh, I have something working on strange on your
lobby fee. The detail for 0507 is in the budget document on page 23 under the agency summary, but I don't know. I was looking to see if there was a comparison to 0305. In your budget document, under agency summary on page 2.
It's just the 0507.
Yeah. What you want is a comparison between 0507 and 0305 and what the percentage change here.
Yeah, and then I want some kind of a rationale for why it all adds up to 10%.
Okay.
I can have that for you tomorrow.
Thank you. Okay, that brings us to what I think is the end of the agenda, but having walked in here more than halfway through, I'm not sure if that's a correct statement.
That is correct, Madam Chair. Tomorrow on the agenda, we'll follow up with the detail here. We have public testimony.
Okay. And with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 5011 and adjourn the meeting.